welcome.
And I can't help feel like I'm doing this.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, the fabulously fluoridated Island Chains Nation. My very special guest today is a heavily tattooed man. His name is Chris Spivey. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hello, Vinny.
Whew, lucky we got you. We've been spending the last half hour trying to sort out technical issues, and they have been sorted. Well, not really. We got it by phone, so it's all good. Anyway, would you please tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is you do, Chris?
Well, I'm a tattooist by trade, but basically, Vinny, I'm just fed up with the politicians taking the Michael out of us all the time. You know, they're not working for us, they're working for other people, very powerful people, and frankly, they're just screwing us, really.
What woke you up to that fact?
Sorry?
What woke you up to that fact? And I acknowledge that it's a fact, not a theory.
Really, I mean, I've always been sort of not in sync, if you like, you know? Nothing's ever seemed quite right. I always thought that, you know, nothing seemed to change. And then when, like a lot of people, 9/11 came about, that sort of didn't fit in.
Well, Chris, we're having some very, very bad problem with your line there, like a big scratchy sound or something like that.
I don't know why. I can hear you fine.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. It sounds fine now.
So, as I was saying, 9/11. Now I've got a scratchy sound myself.
See, now the scratchy sound's back again, bro.
Yeah.
It just kind of, like, goes out and you sound fine, and then it just comes back and goes...
Yeah, I can hear it now, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not dancing or anything.
Yeah. Shoot!
Right. We try again. So, yeah, 9/11 sort of came about, and nothing added up there. Sort of started digging into that, and it just went from there. Just started researching, and this is where I am today.
Yeah. Happens to a lot of people, I guess.
Sorry?
Happens to a lot of people, I guess.
It's happening to more and more people, which is, it's happening to more and more people. Not quick enough, though, Vinny. Not quick enough, mate. We're running out of time, you know? And take this Thatcher's funeral for a start. It's costing, well, some quotes are saying £20 million. So how can you justify spending £20 million when the best they can get is 25% of the people? Can you hear me?
Yeah. I can make out what you're saying over the...
Yeah.
This is just not working, bro.
You're a long way away from me, mate.
If you go to the Skype, and if you have a cell phone or something like that, we can probably get you on that. So just type us in that phone number, and we should be able to reconnect you, see if it works better. Okay. Well, we seem to have lost Chris. All right. Well, let's see if we can fill in for him here. The element of false flag terrorism that 9/11 presents for people is a life-changing event. You suddenly recognize that, oh my God, I've been sitting there watching these towers explode over and over and over and repeats itself. Terrorism, Al-Qaeda. And suddenly you get the idea that, oh my God, those towers were blown up by terrorists in Al-Qaeda. And then, later on, you think to yourself, hey, what's the melting point of steel? Oh, no, it's like 1,500 degrees Fahrenheit or something. Oh, okay. And what's the hottest temperature that jet fuel can get up to? I don't know, about 800 degrees Fahrenheit or something like that. Right. So you're saying that it's, in physics, impossible for jet fuel to melt steel. That's right. Yet they claim that it melted the steel. And made the entire building explode into particleized dust. I'd be like, yeah, yeah, that's right. You freaking lying bastards! How dare you tell such a monumental fib, mate? Unfreaking believable. Am I the only one that sees that this is just fully insane? Like, fully insane? I don't know. It's beyond a joke to me that people can look at the evidence. I mean, just looking at the event and having it repeated to you over and over again, that's enough to convince most people that it's true. Okay, but upon further study, looking at some principles and things of that nature, it just doesn't fit with reality. And that's the vast majority of people, really, what won't actually get to that point, or might not. Who knows what the future holds. But most people won't get to that point of simply looking into something. Okay, most of our lives are spent as passive observers. Passive observers. That's all we've really got. That's our claim to fame. That's all we're capable of really doing. And the jump from being passive observers to active observers comes through this information. And once you hear the theories, okay, so there's, what are we talking about? Nanothermite or controlled demolition or directed energy weapons or nuclear bombs, mini nukes or whatever they call there, either planted in the basement or whatever, the possible Israeli Mossad connections and things like that. Incidentally, there was an Israeli shipping company in the World Trade Center that moved out the week before 9/11 and they broke their like lease. Somebody knew what was up. Lots of people knew what was up that day. Apparently, children in classrooms around New York City were talking about the towers coming down days before it happened. You know, maybe they'd overheard some conversation between mummy and daddy. A whole bunch of people didn't turn up to work. Those who did turn up to work never came home. Well, most of them anyway. Can you understand the mentality of a false flag terrorism attack? Okay, so let's think about this. You're walking down the street, let's say you're a man, and you see this woman that you think is absolutely gorgeous and you want her. Instead of buying her flowers and chocolates and taking her out for a nice meal and stuff like that, you trip her up. But you convince her that it was somebody else that tripped her up later. And then you catch her as she falls. And you go, oh, I'm your savior. And she loves you. And then you get your way with it. That's false flag terrorism, basically. You cause the very problem and then pose as the savior. It's in every movie, pretty much. You know, Star Wars Episode 3. I am the Dark Evil Emperor. And I made this entire Clone War happen. Just so that I can control all of the systems under a great galactic empire. Yep. Sounds about right. It's not entirely dissimilar from the war in Iraq after 9/11, is it? Is it? Oh, they've got weapons of mass destruction. How do you know that? Well, we looked at the receipt. But as soon as that check clears, we're going in. Are you kidding me? Can we ask as well, how many people have died in Iraq? Over 1 million? Conservatively? How many people died in Iraq during suicide bombings on the day that the people of Boston got bombed? Probably by the government too. About 33. 33 versus 3. Yes, and I understand the number 33 is very interesting. There happened to be that many. It was just on the same day. You know, here we are in New Zealand watching the news, and out of the, hour or so of extended coverage they have for these three white Americans that died, there's just a mention. Oh, and by the way, 33 people died in Iraq by suicide bombers today. Good night, everybody. don't give a frack, do they? Not in the media apparel performance. And then, of course, the United Kingdom gets hit by its own false flag as well on 7-7. Where they're doing a drill. This is an interesting connection, isn't it? So, on 9-11, they're doing a drill in NORAD about passenger aircraft being hijacked and flown into the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and the White House. Okay? They managed to hit quite a few of those targets, don't you think? And there were artificial blips on the screens and stuff like that, so nobody knew what the heck was going on. Jets didn't scramble until like 15 minutes after they should, and they went in the wrong direction. Somebody was messing with those people. Then on 7-7, oh, you've got how many tube bombs? Like, what, 2-3 tube stations and a bus?
Hello, Vinny.
Oh, hey, here we go. We got Chris back.
How we going, mate? All right.
We're doing all right.
Yeah. So what were we talking about, Vinny?
Well, I was just trying to explain the outlays of false flags and how they kind of happen to everybody.
Yeah.
Like on 7-7, they've got, four bombs that went off, one of them on a bus that had a banner that said absolute terror.
That bus had been diverted as well. It should have been in Russell Square. Did you know that?
Yeah.
It was the only one sent up there, and it wasn't meant to be up there. There's very suspect. And also, you know, that the holes blown into cabbages, the metal was facing upwards rather than downwards. So the bombs came from beneath the trains, you know? So that doesn't make sense. And then there's the photoshopped pictures of the terrorists. I don't know if you've seen it. It's quite a famous picture. Of the terrorists entering the tube station, and there's a railing there, and the railing goes right through one of them's body. So, that's very suspect straight away. Plus, the explosives they had, they wouldn't have been able to get hold of. It's military grade. So, all that talk about homemade bombs and that was rubbish as well.
Yeah. On top of that, a couple of the suicide bombers were seen leaving stations and got shot down by police in the Isle of Dogs. isn't that funny?
It's like the terrorists from 9/11, Vinny, isn't it? Do you know, most of them are still alive.
Yeah. They claim that they're victims of identity theft.
Well, whatever they are, they're still alive, mate. And as for passports flying out of aeroplanes that hit buildings and landed intact, that doesn't make... Well, that's beyond silly, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, we were discussing this yesterday in relation to the Boston bombings, because just like on 9/11, just like on 7/7, the Boston bombings had a bomb drill going on.
Yeah, okay. Same as a bombing as well.
Yeah, my girlfriend was looking at a Facebook post and it says, if the government is doing a drill, get the frack out of town.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, that's good advice to take. But,
don't worry, it's just a drill. And then everybody goes, it's running.
Well, it didn't make sense anyway to me, Vinny. We had Thatcher's funeral. But instead they choose to plant bombs in Boston, you know, a couple of bombs anywhere in London yesterday would have done the trick, you know, and get them a lot more attention. I mean, imagine if that had caused chaos, set a couple of bombs off in the East End, or even away from the funeral, imagine how much disruption that would have caused, you know. I say they didn't even have to set them off at the actual location, you know?
Mm.
So doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah, I was watching footage from Boston last night. They've locked practically the whole fracking city down. They've closed all the schools. They've stopped all public transport. They've got troops and all this fricking massive body armor and tanks on the streets and all of this kind of stuff for a manhunt for, like, one or two guys, they claim.
Haven't they shot them now or something? Didn't I see earlier?
Really? Is that what happened earlier?
I believe they've been shot dead. Don't quote me. I haven't been on the internet that much today. I've been busy with other things, but as far as I know, yeah, they've shot them dead, which didn't make sense either.
If you've got a bomber and something like that, hey, you want to take them alive so that you can send them to jail.
Of course you do, but it's the same as this Bin Laden thing, isn't it? All the people who supposedly shot him, they're all dead. That biggest attack or most successful attack the Taliban has ever had, shooting down the helicopter, and it just happened that the Navy SEALs who supposedly killed Bin Laden were there.
Yeah, we're all on there, overloaded as well. You're only supposed to have 6 SEALs per chopper, I think, or something like that, and they had the whole SEAL team,
the whole lot of
one chopper,
exactly.
Got taken down.
You know, and that was the most successful Taliban hit to date. It just doesn't make sense, mate. All that burying at sea. Why did they bury him at sea? He wasn't in the Navy.
Yeah. Well, Chris, hold on a second. We're coming back to break. We'll be right back in just a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay.
The world we knew is gone.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny, slave, British-controlled South Pacific. My very special guest is Chris Spivey, tattoo artist and conspiracy expert-ish. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Vinnie.
Right. Now, we've got him via webcam and phone, so we've managed to get some sort of a technical issue going on here. It's good. It's good. Where were we?
We were talking about Bin Laden, wasn't we? The anomalies around his death, you know, sort of why would they bury him at sea? What is the point of that? He wasn't a Navy man. Funerals for the sea are for Navy men, aren't they? It's just all too convenient.
Can you hear me? Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, and that didn't make sense. They said it was so that they couldn't. No one could sort of destroy his grave and whatnot. Well, what a load of old twaddle that is, you know. We had Myra Hindley. You know, you've heard of Myra Hindley in New Zealand, I take it.
No,
she was a mass murderer of children in the 1960s, and she died a few years back. But they didn't bury her at sea, you know, and she was absolutely reviled. So that just makes no sense whatsoever. That Jimmy Savile hasn't been buried at sea, has he? Yeah, they've removed his headstone, but they didn't bury him at sea. So that just makes no sense. That's just a little bit too convenient, isn't it? You know, the whole thing was a lot of old bollocks, anyway, Vinny, wasn't it? He had the old man looking at videos of himself or what the newspaper said. This is Bin Laden only. The footage was taken from behind, not front. Well, why do that? Who takes a home movie from behind? But they portrayed him as a sad sort of figure, watching these home movies of his glory days, so to speak. And then in the next breath, they're saying, he's the most dangerous man in the world. You can't have it both ways. You know, you can't one minute be like Satan and the next minute be, a sad old man. It's just bollocks, mate.
It was quite hilarious to me. I asked my friend Genocide, is a Muslim rapper here in New Zealand, and said, "Bro, they said it was a Muslim burial to dump them into the ocean." He's like, "Nah, bro, Muslim burial. You have to bury them really, really quickly, as quickly as possible.
Yeah, within 24 hours.
Within 24 hours, 6 feet under the ground, so animals can't get them. In what world does that translate as turn them into shark bait?"
Exactly. I said it was all just too convenient because his body can't be exhumed, can it? There's no way of proving whether it was him or wasn't him. But we all know he died shortly after 9/11 anyway. He was in the American Army Hospital in Egypt, I think, if I remember rightly. on dialysis. He was very sick anyway, wasn't he? So it was just sort of convenient, a distraction, if you like, to sort of finish him off there. And to have all them American politicians in the one room with Hillary Clinton, what an evil woman that is. Hillary Clinton sort of clasping her mouth in mock horror. It's almost ghoulish, isn't it? Let's watch this man shot today, who isn't being shot, but, you know, what a load of old twaddle. And I say, then kill off all the Navy SEALs as well. Whether they actually did get killed off, whether they existed at all, Vinny, is questionable, isn't it? You know? Because it just wasn't Bin Laden. It wasn't, you know? What a load of old crap.
If the government tells me the sky is blue, I'm going to have to check just before I believe it, you know?
Well, yeah, we are, Vinny, but millions and millions of other people aren't. You know, they're all buying into this crap. I've written a few things on Thatcher, getting back to Thatcher. And people, they're arguing between whether she, you know, did any good or whether she did any bad. Like, you know, some say that her breaking of the unions was a good thing, others... Well, obviously, no, it wasn't a good thing. But that's beside the point. The point is, she spent 11 consecutive Christmases with a known paedophile, a necrophile as well, you know, Jimmy Savile. 11 consecutive. Now, you look at Thatcher, you know, sort of with her prim and proper hair and a posh speaking voice, and that, and you look at Jimmy Savile with his flamboyant clothes and his dyed hair, and you think, well, what the hell have they got in common? What are they going to talk about? Yeah, 11 consecutive Christmases. And she would bend over backwards to help him out, you know, appearing on his shows, appearing on his radio shows. He even bragged in the newspaper that he was responsible for getting her into power. Now, I know I've been tongue-in-cheek, but that sort of close, and that goes to the royal family as well. It's just been announced today, world exclusive in the Sun newspaper, Britain's biggest selling newspaper, that Rolf Harris was arrested. Well, I've been printing that for the last 5 months, that Rolf Harris, but suddenly it's a Sun exclusive. But, you know, once again, straight away, the picture that accompanies it is of Prince Charles. Why? Why is Prince Charles such good friends with all these people, you know, Jimmy Savile, Rolf Harris? You can connect everyone who's been arrested back to the royal, and have all been rewarded by the Queen as well, of course. That's, you know, it almost makes anyone who gets an MBE suspect. But they won't knock on the palace door. They won't even question them. Do you know, when it's over. And I don't know if you've seen the photos, Vinny, of Savile and Prince Charles. But
no.
There's obviously a very, very close relationship there, you know. And, of course, Savile was friends with the old man, the duck, as I call him, full of duck, Prince Philip. And they fell out, you know, we hear these, they fell out spectacularly. Well, what the hell can a DJ he's the King of England in all but name. What can they fall out over? Why didn't they, you know, did it just sort of freeze him out of the royal circles? Why fall out and have this big argument? You know, it doesn't make sense. Once again, Savile was introduced to Prince Philip through Mountbatten. I did an article on Mountbatten just the other day. A known paedophile, I mean, that man was a pervert of the First Order. When you got the mainstream media commenting on the marriage and admitting that they were having a threesome with the Indian Prime Minister just after the war, I forget, Nehru or whatever his name was, and the mainstream media are admitting that they used to have threesomes, this Mountbatten, Mrs. Mountbatten, and the Indian Prime Minister, and that's how perverted they was.
Can I say something? Allegedly, that is basically how the upper echelons work on straight up sexual debauchery. More to the point, recorded at some point, so that if they ever start speaking out or whatever, out come the pictures of you with a little kid.
Exactly, and this is how Skull and Bones works as well. But George Bush was in there for a house, and then apparently, you know, the sort of masturbation going on there sex with fellas and whatnot. So that way, you know, that stops them from speaking out. Vinny, Mountbatten, without a doubt, was abusing the Duke, Prince Philip. And then, knowing that, he then left the young Prince Charles in his care. Now, what kind of parent leaves their little boy in the care of a known paedophile, mate?
Maybe one that wants to see them sexually abused so that they can be controlled for the rest of their life.
And this is just the norm. This is the norm within the royal family, and people just can't get their heads around this, you know. They see these posh-talking, well-to-do people, and they can't think no bad of them, you know. And I see people waving their little flags at them. Well, the Queen is the richest woman in the world. We've got children starving in this country, mate. Starving in England today. There is children starving. And what was she doing about it? You know, she's meant to be this gracious, noble queen. She could end world poverty, let alone British poverty, and still be a multi-trillionaire. But what does she do? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. In fact, I keep posing the question in my articles, what has the Queen done in the 60 years that she's been on the throne for England, you know, or for her subjects? And there is, she brings a lot of money in. In tourism. Of course she doesn't. The heritage would still be there. You know, people don't say, hey, honey, we're going on holiday, let's go and see the Queen. You know, they're not going to see the Queen. They come to see the palaces, the heritage is still going to be there, even when the Queen is long gone. You know, to say that the Queen brings in so many millions is just bollocks. And on top of that, even then, the money that he's brought in tourism is nowhere near the cost of the upkeep of the royal family. Now, I say, Vinny, if people want the royal family, let them pay for her. And if they don't, they don't serve no purpose on as far as the public are concerned. They just so, but they're not ceremonial, Vinny. They're not. We cannot go to war without the Queen say so. We cannot end a war without a Queen say so. She has the power to sack the government, you know, as she did with the Australian Prime Minister a few years back. I can't remember which one.
Kevin Rudd?
I'm not sure which
one. I thought they did it to the Canadian government. They actually did suspend the Canadian Parliament for a number of months, actually. I think it was like she suspended them for like 3 months.
I'm sure it was the Australian Prime Minister, mate. I may be wrong. I haven't got my notes in front of me, but I'm sure it was the Australian. Going back a few years now. But although they didn't come out and say the Queen has sacked the Australian Prime Minister, as you know, because she is the Queen of Australia as well. But it was her doing. It was all, you know, sort of traced back to her. And this is, but people think, she's just ceremonial. But that is a load of old bollocks, mate. She's far from ceremonial. They have an awful say, and in the event that Prince Charles is continually lobbying for more money, well, you know.
There's two things I'd like to add in here. One was an article out of the Telegraph, I think, where the Queen was pleading poverty and that she wanted a fund that was meant to go to the poor to go to her so that she could heat the palaces that she
didn't That's right, yeah. She couldn't afford a central heating bill. Yeah. You know, and people believe it. But this is the thing, Vinny. This is the serious thing. People believe it, and that is dangerous, mate. That is where the... Because whatever the mainstream media... No one questions it. No one questions it. No one. How many governments have come and gone in the past, and no one's ever known better? Oh, well, that's it. Do you know, I say, I'm not going to vote for Conservatives, I'm going to vote for Labour. You vote for the same people, mate. You know, it's the whole system. You've got to think outside the box now, because the system isn't working. It's designed not to work. It never will work. And people are just contributing to their deaths, mate.
Well, I disagree. I think the system is working, and it's working really well. It's just it's not meant to be working for us.
exactly. So sooner or later, the economy is going to collapse. It has to collapse. I mean, we've got all these austerity measures over here, they've been in place since at least 2 years. Getting tougher and tougher, yet the national debt, a fraudulent debt, is continually rising. Do you know, it's not going down. And we're talking about the interest, Vinny. We're not talking about paying the debt off, we're talking about paying the interest. And this is what's happened, of course, this is what's happened in Greece and whatnot. They can't afford the debt. They can't afford the interest on the debt. The bankers aren't worried about the actual debt. It's as long as they get their interest payments on it. Once you default on that, they call it in, and then that's when your economy collapses. And this was what happened in Greece, and it's going to happen in Portugal. This is what happened in Ireland. They could no longer afford the interest on the debt. And, I mean, you think about it. When Cameron came in and said, yeah, we've got to get this debt down, introduced all these measures to so the debt would stop rising and then they could pay it off. And if it was a case of just reducing the debt, the austerity measures could be taken over a longer period of time. Why, you know, all of a sudden... But it's not. I say it's the interest, and that is the crucial thing. That's what people have got to understand. They've also got to understand it's a fraudulent debt. You know, Iceland defaulted on it. Iceland's doing very nicely now. You never read about Iceland in the mainstream media. Why not?
Yeah, the perfect example of what happens when you just go, hey, hold on a second, Mr. Bankster scumbag, you're a fraudster. And all the debt that you think you've got us in, you just made that stuff up. All right. Now it's. I think of it as like a medical thing, okay? If the debt doesn't go down in 4 years, you've got to contact your doctor. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about the fact that you've got nowhere to hide, nowhere to run. We're all slaves, and we live in a slave, serf, scumbag-controlled planet. And if we don't expose those who are really behind the scenes in control, we're going to be screwed a hell of a lot worse than we are already. My very special guest, coming at us all the way from the Uber Kingdom, named after the Saxe Coburg Gotha Regiment, is Chris Spivey. Welcome back.
Thank you, Vinny. All right. Vinny, over here, just before Christmas, I was contacted by a social worker who used to work for the NSPCC, which, if you don't know, the NSPCC is the National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children. It is a massive, massive charity, government-funded charity at that. Now, the reason for the contact was because this social worker, Sue, her name is, her and two of her colleagues had been hounded out of this organisation simply for exposing an MK or ANC terrorist called Hein Grosskopf. Now, in 1986, Grosskopf, South African, he very well-to-do white family. His dad was the editor of Beeld, the Beeld newspaper, which is, I think, the biggest one in South Africa. Very, very prominent professor. Very upper-middle-class family. He buggered off to join the ANC in 1986, leaving a wife behind. And he, within 3 months, he was in MK. Now, for anybody who doesn't know, MK is the terrorist wing, the paramilitary wing of the ANC, the ones who set the bombs off and whatnot. To cut a long story short, he fled to England in 1991. Now, at that time, England, Ken Baker was the Home Secretary. He was looking to kick all the ANC MK terrorists out of England. This Grosskopf, he entered the country on a false passport under the name of Evans, and he stayed. But not only did he stay and get leave to stay indefinitely, he miraculously became a qualified social worker, registered with the General and Social Care Council. Now, he had to be fraudulently registered. I broke the story. A lot of people contacted the NSPCC, who refused to answer to start. I had a bit of a spat with an MP who supposedly brought all these paedophiles in British politics to the forefront, but that's a different story, but there's a load of old bollocks anyway. But I had a spat with him on Twitter over it. He said he'd sort of look, read my article and get back to me, which he never did. A lot of people contacted their politicians about this, mass murderer, basically. Although he received amnesty at the Truth and Reconciliation Committee, for one bomb on the Witwatersrand military complex, which killed one person and injured about 70 others. Although at the TRC, the Truth and Reconciliation Committee, they refused to say that. They just said the 30 people was injured. They didn't admit to any deaths, although that's not true. But he was the most wanted man in South Africa with a 50 rand price on his head when he entered the country. So, and we have an extradition treaty with South Africa. We did at the time as well. Yet they let him stay, become a social worker. Well, to have in charge of grief counsellors, incidentally, children's grief counsellors. So, like, you have a mass murderer in charge of grief. That's like putting a paedophile in charge of a children's swimming class, you know? A lot of people contacted their MPs, got nowhere. Finally, the NSPCC bowed to public pressure and issued a statement saying that, he wasn't wanted by any government. The TRC said that he didn't commit a crime, which is, once again, bollocks. You know, when is a crime not a crime? Bearing in mind that South Africa now is an ANC government, so these people were sort of blowing other people up in their name, you know. So they was always going to get it. But just because you're given amnesty doesn't mean you didn't commit a crime. But the major factor here, I say, the NSPCC released this statement saying that Grosskopf, received amnesty, but he hadn't received amnesty when they took him on. Now, he was suspended when he asked for time off to go to the TRC. Incidentally, he still can't return to South Africa, so it's still too dangerous for him to return to South Africa to this very day. Which, really, when you think about Zumba, the African president, he was same in the ANC. Mandela, he was in the ANC, you know, a terrorist. They're treated like heroes, so he should have been treated like a hero, but he wasn't. You got to ask yourself why. He still can't return to South Africa. He hadn't received amnesty when he was employed as a grief counsellor by the NSPCC. Finally, to cut a long story short, the General and Social Care Council were going to forward the complaint. Panorama, a BBC TV program, investigative program, were going to do the story. The Daily Mirror, a national newspaper, and I think it was the Telegraph, if I remember, it might have been the Express. One, another newspaper, anyway, they was going to run the story. All three got warned off. Now, the Queen is the patron of this charity. Prince Andrew is fact, not, as you know, Prince Andrew, he was with the paedophile. He lost his job as our Roman ambassador for his friendship with his, this paedophile. Peter Mandelson, who they call the Prince of Darkness, twice drummed out of British politics for wrongdoing, fast-tracking passports for his boyfriend, his Brazilian boyfriend and whatever. A known paedophile, as the sort of face of the NSPCC, and we cannot get any answers. I say, the NSPCC statement that they released was total bollocks. I proved it was total bollocks. My MP, my own MP, will not even answer me, will not even acknowledge that he got my emails. The list is long. We have Tom Watson, Eric Pickles, 10, 15 MPs, all refusing to acknowledge people. Go on.
You're aware of Pie and Mash Films, right?
I am, yeah, Bill Mahoney, yeah.
Yeah. Well, didn't Bill interview some dude who said that he's got a list of known paedophiles in the UK, and about 300 of them out of the 600 sitting MPs are still there, and they're known paedophiles?
There was, when we had the Blair government in, he brought in a D-notice because of Dunblane. Do you know the Dunblane massacre where a fellow called Thomas Hamilton walked into a children's primary school and shot dead, I think it was 18, I haven't got one else in front of me, but I think it was 18 children aged between 5 and 6 and the teacher. Now, he was a Freemason, and he'd been turned down for... He was known paedophile. He'd been turned down for a gun licence, but Lord Robertson overruled the decision, if you like, and he gave him the shotgun licence, which he used to kill. They brought a D-notice in. They're all connected to a very high... children's paedophile ring, Scottish paedophile ring, you know, and the evidence is protected under the 100-year rule. Like normally, you get 30-year disclosure rule, but it's locked away for 100 years. But Tony Blair bought this D-notice under the guise of national security for the first Iraq war, which but it wasn't. On top of that, he'd been caught. Flashing, if you like, in men's toilets. A few, which seems a popular pastime for British prime ministers. I don't know how Margaret Thatcher got on with it, but Edward Heath was known for which he was blackmailed into taking us into the EU or common market, as it was then, for the same thing, and for taking boys from the Hortigau in Jersey, boys' home. Out on his boats, for life and whatnot. But, so Tony Blair protected all, because a lot of them were caught up within Operation Orr, where they caught all the internet paedophiles, you know, buying porn and whatnot. And I think that's the list you're talking about. They're still in politics. I mean, we've got... The case where Ken Sue Clark, I call him, a heavyweight politician from the Thatcher era who's still in the Cameron government today. Ben Fellows, a former child actor, publicly accused him, and I believe has even made a police statement now, which was at the end of November. according to the TAP blog. Bedfellows, mate, I say. And what the claim is, although he was 18 at the time, Ken Clark believed that he was 15 and touched his penis in the House of Commons through his trousers in a fellow called Ian Greer, Greer's office, who is a lobbyist. And I say Ken Clark says he's through, but he hasn't.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break with a little bit more from Chris.